Dead more, Reese said, a quiet reprimand. A secret, I realized, that perhaps had remained hidden for 5 centuries. A secret that had fueled the dreams of Reese and of his court. A land where 2 dreamers had found peace between their peoples. Where there was no wall, no iron wards, no ash arrows. The Golden Queen and Ancient Queen looked to each other again. The Ancient One's eyes were bright as she declared,
Give us proof. If you are not the High Lord that rumor claims, give us 1 shred of proof that you are as you say, a male of peace.
There was 1 way, only 1 way to show them, prove it to them. Valaris. My very bones cried out at the thought of revealing that gem to these spiders. Reese rose in a fluid motion. The queens did the same. His voice was like a moonless night as he said, You desire proof. I held my breath, praying he wouldn't tell them. He shrugged, the silver thread in his jacket catching the sunlight.
I shall get it for you. Await my word, and return when we summon you.
We are summoned by no one, human or fairy, the Golden Queen simpered.
Perhaps that was why they'd taken so long to reply, to play some power game.
Then come at your leisure, Reese said, with enough of a bite that the Queen's guards stepped forward.
Cassian only grinned at them, and the wisest among them instantly paled. Reese barely inclined his head as he added,
Perhaps then you'll comprehend how vital the book is to both our efforts.
We will consider it once we have your proof.
The Ancient One nearly spat the word. Some part of me reminded myself that she was old and royal, and smacking that sneer off her face would not be in our best interests.
That book has been ours to protect for 500 years. We will not hand it over without due consideration.
The guards flanked them, as if the words had been some predetermined signal. The Golden Queen smirked at me and said,
Good luck.
Then they were gone. The sitting room was suddenly too big, too quiet, and it was Elaine, who sighed and murmured,
I hope they all burn in hell.
Chapter 41. We were mostly silent during the flight and winnowing to Valaris. Amryn was already waiting in the townhouse, her clothes rumpled, face unnervingly pale. I made a note to get her more blood immediately. But rather than gather in the dining or sitting room, Reese strolled down the hall, hands in his pockets, past the kitchen, and out into the courtyard garden in the back. The rest of us lingered in the foyer, staring after him, the silence radiating from him, like the calm before a storm.
It went well, I take it, Amryn said.
Cassian gave her a look and trailed after his friend. The sun and arid day had warmed the garden, bits of green now poking their heads out here and there in the countless beds and pots. Reese sat on the rim of the fountain, forearms braced on his knees, staring at the moss-flecked flagstone between his feet. We all found our seats in the white-painted iron chairs throughout. If only humans could see them, fairies sitting on iron, they'd throw away those ridiculous baubles and jewelry. Perhaps even Elaine would receive an engagement ring that hadn't been forged with hate and fear.
If you're out here to brood, Reese, Amryn said from her perch on a little bench, then just say so, and let me go back to my work.
Violet eyes lifted to hers, cold, humorless.
The humans wish for proof of our good intentions, that we can be trusted.
Amryn's attention cut to me.
Pharaoh was not enough.
I tried not to let the words sting. No, I had not been enough. Perhaps I'd even failed in my role as emissary.
She is more than enough,
Reese said with that deadly calm, and I wondered if I'd sent my own pathetic thoughts down the bond. I snapped my shield up once more.
They're fools. Worse, frightened fools.
He studied the ground again, as if the dried moss and stone made up some pattern no one but him could see. Cassian said,
We could depose them, get newer, smarter queens on their thrones who might be willing to bargain.
Reese shook his head.
One, it'd take too long. We don't have that time.
I thought of the past few wasted weeks, how hard Asriel had tried to get into those courts. If even his shadows and spies could not breach their inner workings, then I doubted an assassin would. The confirming shake of the head Asriel gave Cassian said as much.
Two, Rhys continued. Who knows if that would somehow impact the magic of their half of the book? It must be given freely. It's possible the magic is strong enough to see our scheming.
He sucked on his teeth.
We are stuck with them.
We could try again, Moore said. Let me speak to them. Let me go to their palace.
No,
Asriel said. Moore raised her brows, and a faint color stained Asriel's tan face. But his features were set, his hazel eyes solid.
You're not setting foot in that human realm.
I fought in the war. You will do well to remember—
No,
Asriel said again, refusing to break her stare. His shifting wings rasped against the back of his chair.
They would string you up and make an example of you.
They'd have to catch me first.
That palace is a death trap for our kind,
Asriel countered, his voice low and rough,
built by Fey hands to protect the humans from us. You set foot inside it, Moore, and you won't walk out again. Why do you think we've had such trouble getting a foothold in there?
If going into their territory isn't an option, I cut in before Moore could say whatever the temper limning her features hissed at her to retort, and surely wound the Shadow Singer more than she intended. And deceit or any mental manipulation might make the magic wreck the book. What proof can be offered? Rhys lifted his head. Who is this Miriam? Who was she to Jurian? And who was that prince you spoke of? Dracon? Perhaps they could be used as proof, if only to vouch for you. The heat died from Moore's eyes as she shifted a foot against the moss and flagstone. But Rhys interlocked his fingers in the space between his knees before he said,
500 years ago, in the years leading up to the war, there was a Fey kingdom in the southern part of the continent. It was a realm of sand surrounding a lush river delta, the Blackland. There was no crueler place to be born a human, for no humans were born free. They were all of them slaves, forced to build great temples and palaces for the High Fey who ruled. There was no escape, no chance of having their freedom purchased. And the queen of the Blackland.
Memory stirred in his face. She made Amarantha seem as sweet as Elaine, Moore explained with soft venom.
Miriam, Rhys continued, was a half-fey female born of a human mother, and as her mother was a slave, as the conception was against her mother's will, so too was Miriam born in shackles and deemed human, denied any rights to her fey heritage.
Tell the full story another time, Amryn cut in. The gist of it, girl, she said to me, is that Miriam was given as a wedding gift by the queen to her betrothed, a foreign fey prince named Dracon. He was horrified and let Miriam escape. Fearing the queen's wrath, she fled through the desert, across the sea, into more desert, and was found by Jurian. She fell in with his rebel armies, became his lover, and was a healer amongst the warriors, until a devastating battle found her tending to Jurian's new fey allies, including Prince Dracon. Turns out, Miriam had opened his eyes to the monster he planned to wed. He'd broken the engagement, allied his armies with the humans, and had been looking for the beautiful slave girl for 3 years. Jurian had no idea that his new ally coveted his lover. He was too focused on winning the war, on destroying Amarantha in the north. As his obsession took over, he was blind to witnessing Miriam and Dracon falling in love behind his back.
It wasn't behind his back, Moore snapped. Miriam ended it with Jurian before she ever laid a finger on Dracon. Amryn shrugged. Long story short, girl, when Jurian was slaughtered by Amarantha, and during the long centuries after, she told him what had happened to his lover, that she'd betrayed him for a fey male. Everyone believed Miriam and Dracon perished while liberating her people from the Blackland at the end of the war, even Amarantha.
And they didn't, I said.
Rhys and Moore nodded. It was all a way to escape, wasn't it? To start over somewhere else, with both their peoples? Another set of nods.
So why not show the queens that? You started to tell them.
Because, Rhys cut in. In addition to it not proving a thing about my character, which seemed to be their biggest gripe, it would be a grave betrayal of our friends. Their only wish was to remain hidden, to live in peace with their peoples. They fought and bled and suffered enough for it. I will not bring them into this conflict.
Drakon's aerial army, Cassian mused, was as good as ours. We might need to call upon him by the end.
Rhys merely shook his head. Conversation over. And perhaps he was right. Revealing Drakon and Miriam's peaceful existence explained nothing about his own intentions, about his own merits and character.
So, what do we offer them instead? I asked. What do we show them?
Rhys's face was bleak. We show them Valaris.
What? Moore barked, but Amryn shushed her. You can't mean to bring them here, I said.
Of course not. The risks are too great. Entertaining them for even a night would likely result in bloodshed, Rhys said. So I plan to merely show them.
They'll dismiss it as mind tricks, Azriel countered.
No, Rhys said, getting to his feet. I mean to show them, playing by their own rules.
Amryn clicked her nails against each other. What do you mean, High Lord?
But Rhys only said to Moore, send word to your father. We're going to pay him and my other court a visit.
My blood iced over. The Court of Nightmares.
There was an orb, it turned out, that had belonged to Moore's family for millennia. The Veritas. It was rife with the truth magic she'd claimed to possess, that many in her bloodline also bore. And the Veritas was one of their most valued and guarded talismans. Rhys wasted no time planning. We'd go to the Court of Nightmares within the Hewn City tomorrow afternoon, winnowing near the massive mountain it was built within, and then flying the rest of the way. More, Cassian and I were mere distractions to make Rhys's sudden visit less suspicious, while Azriel stole the orb from Moore's father's chambers. The orb was known amongst the humans, had been wielded by them in the war, Rhys told me over a quiet dinner that night. The queens would know it, and would know it was absolute truth, not illusion or a trick, when we used it to show them, like peering into a living painting, that this city and its good people existed. The others had suggested other places within his territory to prove he wasn't some warmongering sadist, but none had the same impact as Valaris, Rhys claimed. For his people, for the world, he'd offer the queens this slice of truth. After dinner, I wandered into the streets and found myself eventually standing at the edge of the rainbow, the night in full swing, patrons and artists and everyday citizens bustling from shop to shop, peering in the galleries, buying supplies. Compared to the sparkling lights and bright colors of the little hill sloping down to the river ahead, the streets behind me were shadowed, sleeping. I'd been here nearly 2 months, and hadn't worked up the courage to walk through the artist's quarter. But this place. Rhys would risk this beautiful city, these lovely people, all for a shot at peace. Perhaps the guilt of leaving it protected while the rest of Prithian had suffered drove him. Perhaps offering up Valaris on a silver platter was his own attempt to ease the weight. I rubbed at my chest, an ache building in there. I took a step toward the quarter and halted. Maybe I should have asked Moore to come, but she'd left after dinner, pale-faced and jumpy, ignoring Cassian's attempt to speak with her. Azriel had taken to the clouds to contact his spies. He'd quietly promised the pacing Cassian to find Moore when he was done. And Rhys? He had enough going on, and he hadn't objected when I stated I was going for a walk. He hadn't even warned me to be careful. If it was trust, or absolute faith in the safety of his city, or just that he knew how badly I'd react if he tried to tell me not to go or warn me? I didn't know. I shook my head, clearing my thoughts as I again stared down the main street of the rainbow. I'd felt flickers these past few weeks in that hole inside my chest. Flickers of images, but nothing solid. Nothing roaring with life and demand. Not in the way it had that night, seeing him kneel on that bed, naked and tattooed and winged. It'd be stupid to venture into the quarter anyway, when it might very well be ruined in any upcoming conflict. It'd be stupid to fall in love with it, when it might be torn from me. So, like a coward, I turned and went home. Reese was waiting in the foyer, leaning against the post of the stair banister. His face was grim. I halted in the middle of the entry carpet. What's wrong? His wings were nowhere to be seen, not even the shadow of them.
I'm debating asking you to stay tomorrow.
I crossed my arms. I thought I was going. Don't lock me up in this house. Don't shove me aside. He ran a hand through his hair.
What I have to be tomorrow, who I have to become, is not. It's not something I want you to see. How I will treat you, treat the others.
The mask of the High Lord, I said quietly.
Yes.
He took a seat on the bottom step of the stairs. I remained in the center of the foyer as I asked carefully, Why don't you want me to see that?
Because you've only started to look at me like I'm not a monster, and I can't stomach the idea of anything you see tomorrow being beneath that mountain, putting you back into that place where I found you.
Beneath that mountain?
Underground?
Yes, I'd forgotten that. Forgotten I'd see the court that Amarantha had modeled her own after, that I'd be trapped beneath the earth. But with Cassian, and Azrael, and more, with him. I waited for the panic, the cold sweat. Neither came.
Let me help, in whatever way I can.
Bleakness shaded the starlight in those eyes.
The role you will have to play is not a pleasant one.
I trust you. I sat beside him on the stairs, close enough that the heat of his body warmed the chill night air clinging to my overcoat. Why did Moore look so disturbed when she left? His throat bobbed. I could tell it was rage and pain that kept him from telling me outright, not mistrust. After a moment, he said,
I was there, in the Hewn City, the day her father declared she was to be sold in marriage to Eris, eldest son of the High Lord of the Autumn Court.
Lucien's brother.
Eris had a reputation for cruelty, and more. Begged me not to let it happen. For all her power, all her wildness, she had no voice, no rights with those people. And my father didn't particularly care if his cousins used their offspring as breeding stock.
What happened? I breathed.
I brought Moore to the Illyrian camp for a few days, and she saw Cassian, and decided she'd do the one thing that would ruin her value to these people. I didn't know until after, and it was a mess. With Cassian, with her, with our families. And it's another long story, but the short of it is that Eris refused to marry her. Said she'd been sullied by a bastard-born lesser fairy, and he'd now sooner fuck a sow. Her family, they...
I'd never seen him at such a loss for words. Reese cleared his throat.
When they were done, they dumped her on the Autumn Court border, with a note nailed to her body that said she was Eris's problem.
Nailed.
Nailed to her,
Reese said with soft wrath.
Eris left her for dead in the middle of their woods. Azrael found her a day later. It was all I could do to keep him from going to either court and slaughtering them all.
I thought of that merry face, the flippant laughter, the female that did not care who approved, perhaps because she had seen the ugliest her kind had to offer and had survived. And I understood why Reese could not endure Nesta for more than a few moments, why he could not let go of that anger where her failings were concerned, even if I had. Baron's fire began crackling in my veins. My fire, not his son's either. I took Reese's hand, and his thumb brushed against the back of my palm. I tried not to think about the ease of that stroke as I said in a hard, calm voice I barely recognized, Tell me what I need to do tomorrow. Chapter 42. I was not frightened, not of the role that Reese had asked me to play today, not of the roaring wind as we winnowed into a familiar snow-capped mountain range, refusing to yield to spring's awakening kiss, not of the punishing drop as Reese flew us between the peaks and valleys, swift and sleek. Cassian and Azriel flanked us. More would meet us at the gates to the mountain base. Reese's face was drawn, his shoulders tense as I gripped them. I knew what to expect, but even after he'd told me what he needed me to do, even after I had agreed, he'd been aloof, haunted, worried for me, I realized. And just because of that worry, just to get that tightness off his face, even for these few minutes before we faced his unholy realm beneath that mountain, I said over the wind, Amryn and Moore told me that the span of an Illyrian male's wings says a lot about the size of other parts. His eyes shot to mine, then to pine tree-coated slopes below. Did they know? I shrugged in his arms, trying not to think about the naked body that night all those weeks ago, though I hadn't glimpsed much. They also said Azriel's wings are the biggest. Mischief danced in those violet eyes, washing away the cold distance, the strain. The spymaster was a black blur against the pale blue sky. When we return home, let's get out the measuring stick, shall we? I pinched the rock-hard muscle of his forearm. Reese flashed me a wicked grin before he tilted down. Mountains and snow and trees and sun and utter freefall through wisps of cloud. A breathless scream came out of me as we plummeted. Throwing my arms around his neck was instinct. His low laugh tickled my nape. You're willing to brave my brand of darkness and put up one of your own. Willing to go to a watery grave and take on the Weaver. But a little freefall makes you scream. I'll leave you to rot the next time you have a nightmare, I hissed, my eyes still shut and body locked as he snapped out his wings to ease us into a steady glide. No, you won't, he crooned. You like seeing me naked too much. Prick. His laugh rumbled against me. Eyes closed, the wind roaring like a wild animal. I adjusted my position, gripping him tighter. My knuckles brushed one of his wings, smooth and cool like silk, but hard as stone with it stretched taut. Fascinating. I blindly reached again and dared to run a fingertip along some inner edge. Rhysand shuddered, a soft groan slipping past my ear. That, he said tightly, is very sensitive. I snatched my finger back, pulling away far enough to see his face. With the wind, I had to squint, and my braided hair ripped this way and that, but he was entirely focused on the mountains around us. Does it tickle? He flicked his gaze to me, then to the snow and pine that went on forever. It feels like this, he said, and leaned in so close that his lips brushed the shell of my ear as he sent a gentle breath into it. My back arched on instinct, my chin tipping up at the caress of that breath. Oh, I managed to say. I felt him smile against my ear and pull away. If you want an Illyrian male's attention, you'd be better off grabbing him by the balls. We're trained to protect our wings at all costs. Some males attack first, ask questions later, if their wings are touched without invitation. And during sex? The question blurted out. Reese's face was nothing but feline amusement as he monitored the mountains. During sex, an Illyrian male can find completion just by having someone touch his wings in the right spot. My blood thrummed, dangerous territory, more lethal than the drop below. Have you found that to be true? His eyes stripped me bare. I've never allowed anyone to see or touch my wings during sex. It makes you vulnerable in a way that I'm not comfortable with. Too bad, I said, staring out too casually toward the mighty mountain that now appeared on the horizon, towering over the others, and capped, I noted, with that glimmering palace of moonstone. Why? He asked warily. I shrugged, fighting the upward tugging of my lips. Because I bet you could get into some interesting positions with those wings. Reese loosed a barking laugh, and his nose grazed my ear. I felt him open his mouth to whisper something, but something dark and fast and sleek shot for us, and he plunged down and away, swearing. But another one, and another kept coming. Not just ordinary arrows, I realized as Reese veered, snatching one out of the air. Others bounced harmlessly off a shield he blasted up. He studied the wood in his palm and dropped it with a hiss.
ash arrows to kill fairies. And now that I was one? Faster than the wind, faster than death, Rhys shot for the ground, flew, not winnowed, because he wanted to know where our enemies were, didn't want to lose them. The wind bit my face, screeched in my ears, ripped at my hair with brutal claws. Asriel and Cassian were already hurtling for us. Shields of translucent blue and red encircled them, sending those arrows bouncing off, their siphons at work. The arrows shot from the pine forest, coating the mountains, then vanished. Rhys slammed into the ground, snow flying in his wake, and fury like I hadn't seen since that day in Amarantha's court twisted his features. I could feel it thrumming against me, roiling through the clearing we now stood in. Asriel and Cassian were there in an instant, their colored shields shrinking back into their siphons. The three of them forces of nature in the pine forest. Rhysand didn't even look at me as he ordered Cassian. Take her to the palace and stay there until I'm back. As you're with me. Cassian reached for me, but I stepped away. No. What? Rhys snarled, the word near guttural. Take me with you, I said. I didn't want to go to that Moonstone Palace to pace and wait and wring my fingers. Cassian and Asriel, wisely, kept their mouths shut, and Rhys, mother bless him, only tucked in his wings and crossed his arms, waiting to hear my reasons. I've seen ash arrows, I said a bit breathlessly. I might recognize where they were made, and if they came from the hand of another High Lord, I can detect that too. If they'd come from Tarquin, and I can track just as well on the ground as any of you, except for Asriel, maybe. So you and Cassian take the skies, I said, still waiting for the rejection, the order to lock me up, and I'll hunt on the ground with Asriel. The wrath radiating through the snowy clearing ebbed into frozen, too calm rage. But Rhys said, Cassian, I want aerial patrols on the sea borders, stationed in 2-mile rings, all the way out toward Highburn. I want foot soldiers in the mountain passes along the southern border. Make sure those warning fires are ready on every peak. We're not going to rely on magic. He turned to Asriel. When you're done, warn your spies that they might be compromised and prepare to get them out. And put fresh ones in. We keep this contained. We don't tell anyone inside that court what happened. If anyone mentions it, say it was a training exercise. Because we couldn't afford to let that weakness show, even amongst his subjects. His eyes at last found mine. We've got an hour until we're expected at court. Make it count. We searched, but the missed arrows had been snatched up by our attackers, and even the shadows and wind told Asriel nothing, as if our enemy had been hidden from them as well. But that was twice now that they'd known where Rhys and I would be. Moor found Asriel and me after 20 minutes, wanting to know what the hell had happened. We'd explained, and she'd winnowed away to spin whatever excuse would keep her horrible family from suspecting anything was amiss. But at the end of the hour, we hadn't found a single track, and we could delay our meeting no longer. The Court of Nightmares lay behind a mammoth set of doors carved into the mountain itself. And from the base, the mountain rose so high I couldn't see the palace I had once stayed in atop it, only snow and rock and birds circling above. There was no one outside, no village, no signs of life, nothing to indicate a whole city of people dwelled within. But I did not let my curiosity or any lingering trepidation show as Moor and I entered. Rhys, Cassian, and Asriel would arrive minutes later. There were sentries at the stone gates, clothed not in black, as I might have suspected, but in gray and white, armor meant to blend into the mountain face. Moor didn't so much as look at them as she led me silently inside the mountain city. My body clenched as soon as the darkness, the scent of rock and fire and roasting meat, hit me. I had been here before, suffered here. Not under the mountain. This was not under the mountain. Indeed, Amarantha's court had been the work of a child. The Court of Nightmares was the work of a god. While under the mountain had been a series of halls and rooms and levels, this was truly a city. The walkway that Moor led us down was an avenue, and around us, rising high into gloom, were buildings and spires, homes and bridges,
a metropolis carved from the dark stone of the mountain itself, no inch of it left unmarked or without some lovely, hideous artwork etched into it. Figures danced and fornicated, begged and reveled. Pillars were carved to look like curving vines of night-blooming flowers. Water ran throughout in little streams and rivers tapped from the heart of the mountain itself. The hewn city, a place of such terrible beauty that it was an effort to keep the wonder and dread off my face. Music was already playing somewhere, and our hosts still did not come out to greet us. The people we passed, only High Fae, were clothed in finery, their faces deathly pale and cold. Not one stopped us. Not one smiled or bowed. Moore ignored them all. Neither of us had said one word. Rhys had told me not to, that the walls had ears here. Moore led me down the avenue toward another set of stone gates, thrown open at the base of what looked to be a castle within the mountain, the official seat of the High Lord of the Night Court. Great scaled black beasts were carved into those gates, all coiled together in a nest of claws and fangs, sleeping and fighting, some locked in an endless cycle of devouring each other. Between them flowed vines of jasmine and moonflowers. I could have sworn the beasts seemed to writhe in the silvery glow of the bobbing fae lights throughout the mountain city. The Gates of Eternity, that's what I'd call the painting that flickered in my mind. Moore continued through them, a flash of color and life in this strange, cold place. She wore deepest red, the gossamer and gauze of her sleeveless gown clinging to her breasts and hips, while carefully placed shafts left much of her stomach and back exposed. Her hair was down in rippling waves, and cuffs of solid gold glinted around her wrists. A queen who bowed to no one, a queen who had faced them all down and triumphed. A queen who owned her body, her life, her destiny, and never apologized for it. My clothes, which she had taken a moment in the pine wood to shift me into, were of a similar ilk, nearly identical to those I had been forced to wear under the mountain. Two shafts of fabric that hardly covered my breasts flowed to below my navel, where a belt across my hips joined them into one long shaft that draped between my legs and barely covered my backside. But unlike the chiffon and bright colors I had worn then, this one was fashioned of black, glittering fabric that sparkled with every swish of my hips. Moore had fashioned my hair onto a crown atop my head, right behind the black diadem that had been set before it, accented with flecks of diamond that made it glisten like the night sky. She darkened and lengthened my eyelashes, sweeping out an elegant, vicious line of kohl at the outer corner of each. My lips she'd painted blood red. Into the castle beneath the mountain we strode. There were more people here, milling about the endless halls, watching our every breath. Some looked like Moore, with their gold hair and beautiful faces. They even hissed at her. Moore smirked at them. Part of me wished she'd rip their throats out instead. We at last came to a throne room of polished ebony. More of the serpents from the front gates were carved here, this time wrapped around the countless columns supporting the onyx ceiling. It was so high up that gloom hid its finer details, but I knew more had been carved there, too. Great beasts to monitor the manipulations and scheming within this room. The throne itself had been fashioned out of a few of them, a head snaking around either side of the back, as if they watched over the High Lord's shoulder. A crowd had gathered, and, for a moment, I was again in Amarantha's throne room. So similar was the atmosphere, the malice, so similar was the dais at the other end. A golden-haired, beautiful man stepped into our path toward that ebony throne, and more smoothly halted. I knew he was her father without him saying a word. He was clothed in black, a silver circlet atop his head. His brown eyes were like old soil as he said to her, "Where is he?" No greeting, no formality. He ignored me wholly. Moore shrugged. "He arrives when he wishes to," she continued on. Her father looked at me then, and I willed my face into a mask like hers, disinterested, aloof. Her father surveyed my face, my body, and where I thought he'd sneer and ogle, there was nothing. No emotion, just heartless cold. I followed Moore before disgust wrecked my own icy mask. Banquet tables against the black walls were covered with fat, succulent fruits and wreaths of golden bread, interrupted with roast meats, kegs of cider and ale, and pies and tarts and little cakes of every size and variety. It might have made my mouth water, were it not for the high fae in their finery, were it not for the fact that no one touched the food, the power and wealth lying in letting it go to waste. Moore went right up to the obsidian dais, and I halted at the foot of the steps as she took up a place beside the throne and said to the crowd in a voice that was clear and cruel and cunning, "Your High Lord approaches. He is in a foul mood, so I suggest being on your best behavior, unless you wish to be the evening entertainment." And before the crowd could begin murmuring, I felt it. Felt him. The very rock beneath my feet seemed to tremble, a pulsing, steady beat. His footsteps, as if the mountain shuddered at each touch. Everyone in that room went still as death, as if petrified that their very breathing would draw the attention of the predator now strolling toward us. Moore's shoulders were back, her chin high, feral, wanton pride at her master's arrival. Remembering my role, I kept my own chin lowered, watching beneath my brows. First, Cassian and Azrael appeared in the doorway, the High Lord's general and shadow singer, and the most powerful Illyrians in history. They were not the males I had come to know. Clad in battle black that hugged their muscled forms, their armor was intricate, scaled, their shoulders impossibly broader, their faces a portrait of unfeeling brutality. They reminded me, somehow, of the ebony beasts carved into the pillars they passed. More siphons, I realized, glimmered in addition to the ones atop each of their hands. A siphon in the center of their chest, one on either shoulder, one on either knee. For a moment, my knees quaked, and I understood what the camp lords had feared in them. If one siphon was what most Illyrians needed to handle their killing power, Cassian and Azrael had seven each. Seven. The courtiers had the good sense to back away a step as Cassian and Azrael strolled through the crowd toward the dais. Their wings gleamed, the talons at the apex sharp enough to pierce air, like they'd honed them. Cassian's focus had gone right to Moore, Azrael indulging in all of a glance before scanning the people around them. Most shirked from the spymaster's eyes, though they trembled as they beheld Truth Teller at his side, the Illyrian blade peeking above his left shoulder. Azrael, his face a mask of beautiful death, silently promised them all endless, unyielding torment, even the shadows shuddering in his wake. I knew why, knew for whom he'd gladly do it. They had tried to sell a 17-year-old girl into marriage with a sadist, and then brutalized her in ways I couldn't, wouldn't let myself consider. And these people now lived in utter terror of the three companions who stood at the dais. Good. They should be afraid of them. Afraid of me. And then Rhysand appeared. He had released the damper on his power, on who he was. His power filled the throne room, the castle, the mountain, the world. It had no end and no beginning. No wings, no weapons, no sign of the warrior. Nothing but the elegant, cruel High Lord the world believed him to be. His hands were in his pockets, his black tunic seeming to gobble up the light, and on his head sat a crown of stars. No sign of the male who had been drinking on the roof. No sign of the fallen prince kneeling on his bed. The full impact of him threatened to sweep me away. Here was the most powerful High Lord ever born. The face of dreams and nightmares. Rhys's eyes met mine briefly from across the room as he strolled between the pillars, to the throne that was his by blood and sacrifice and might. My own blood sang at the power that thrummed from him, at the sheer beauty of him. Moore stepped off the dais, dropping to one knee in a smooth bow. Cassian and Azrael followed suit. So did everyone in that room, including me. The ebony floor was so polished I could see my red-painted lips in it, see my own expressionless face. The room was so silent I could hear each of Rhys's footsteps toward us. "Well, well," he said to no one in particular. "Looks like you're all on time for once." Raising his head as he continued kneeling, Cassian gave Rhys a half-grin, the High Lord's commander incarnate, eager to do his bloodletting. Rhys's boots stopped in my line of sight. His fingers were icy on my chin as he lifted my face. The entire room, still on the floor, watched. But this was the role he needed me to play, to be a distraction and novelty. Rhys's lips curved upward.
Welcome to my home, Feyre Cursebreaker.
I lowered my eyes, my coal-thick lashes tickling my cheek. He clicked his tongue, his grip on my chin tightening. Everyone noticed the push of his fingers, the predatory angle of his head as he said,
Come with me.
A tug on my chin, and I rose to my feet. Rhys dragged his eyes over me, and I wondered if it wasn't entirely for show as they glazed a bit. He led me the few steps onto the dais, to the throne. He sat, smiling faintly at his monstrous court. He owned every inch of the throne, these people. And with a tug on my waist, he perched me on his lap. The High Lord's whore, who I'd become under the mountain, who the world expected me to be. The dangerous new pet that Moore's father would now seek to feel out. Rhys's hand slid along my bare waist, the other running down my exposed thigh. Cold. His hands were so cold I almost yelped. He must have felt the silent flinch. A heartbeat later, his hands had warmed. His thumb, curving around the inside of my thigh, gave a slow, long stroke as if to say, Sorry. Rhys indeed leaned in to bring his mouth near my ear, well aware his subjects had not yet risen from the floor, as if they had once done so before they were bidden, long ago, and had learned the consequences. Rhysand whispered to me, his other hand now stroking the bare skin of my ribs in lazy, indolent circles.
Try not to let it go to your head.
I knew they could all hear it. So did he. I stared at their bowed heads, my heart hammering, but said with midnight smoothness, What? Rhys's breath caressed my ear, the twin to the breath he'd brushed against it merely an hour ago in the skies.
That every male in here is contemplating what they'd be willing to give up in order to get that pretty red mouth of yours on them.
I waited for the blush, the shyness to creep in, but I was beautiful. I was strong. I had survived, triumphed, as Moore had survived in this horrible, poisoned house. So I smiled a bit, the first smile of my new mask. Let them see that pretty red mouth and my white straight teeth. His hand slid higher up my thigh, the proprietary touch of a male who knew he owned someone body and soul. He'd apologized in advance for it, for this game, these roles we'd have to play. But I leaned into that touch, leaned back into his hard, warm body. I was pressed so closely against him that I could feel the deep rumble of his voice as he at last said to his court,
Rise.
As one, they did. I smirked at some of them, gloriously bored and infinitely amused. Rhys brushed a knuckle along the inside of my knee, and every nerve in my body narrowed to that touch.
Go play,
he said to them all. They obeyed, the crowd dispersing, music striking up from a distant corner.
Kier,
Rhys said, his voice cutting through the room like lightning on a stormy night. It was all he needed to summon Moore's father to the foot of the dais. Kier bowed again, his face lined with icy resentment as he took in Rhys, then me, glancing once at Moore and the Illyrians. Cassian gave Kier a slow nod that told him he remembered, and would never forget, what the steward of the Hewn City had done to his own daughter. But it was from Asriel that Kier cringed, from the sight of Truth Teller. One day, I realized, Asriel would use that blade on Moore's father, and take a long, long while to carve him up.
Report,
Rhys said, stroking a knuckle down my ribs. He gave a dismissive nod to Cassian, Moore, and Asriel, and the trio faded away into the crowd. Within a heartbeat, Asriel had vanished into shadows and was gone. Kier didn't even turn. Before Rhys, Kier was nothing more than a sullen child, yet I knew Moore's father was older, far older. The steward clung to power, it seemed. Rhys was power.
Greetings, milord. Kier said, his deep voice polished smooth. And greetings to your guest.
Rhys's hand flattened on my thigh as he angled his head to look at me.
She is lovely, isn't she?
Indeed,
Kier said, lowering his eyes.
There is little to report, my lord. All has been quiet since your last visit.
No one for me to punish.
A cat playing with his food.
Unless you'd like for me to select someone here. No, my lord.
Rhys clicked his tongue.
Pity.
He again surveyed me, then leaned to tug my earlobe with his teeth. And damn me to hell, but I leaned farther back as his teeth pressed down at the same moment his thumb drifted high on the side of my thigh, sweeping across sensitive skin in a long, luxurious touch. My body went loose and tight, and my breathing. Cauldron, damn me again. The scent of him, the citrus and the sea, the power roiling off him. My breath hitched a bit. I knew he noticed, knew he felt that shift in me. His fingers stilled on my leg. Kier began mentioning people I didn't know in the court, bland reports on marriages and alliances, blood feuds, and Rhys let him talk. His thumb stroked again, this time joined with his pointer finger. A dull roaring was filling my ears, drowning out everything but that touch on the inside of my leg. The music was throbbing, ancient, wild, and people ground against each other to it. His eyes on the steward, Rhys made vague nods every now and then, while his fingers continued their slow, steady stroking on my thighs, rising higher with every pass. People were watching. Even as they drank and ate, even as some danced in small circles, people were watching. I was sitting in his lap, his own personal plaything, his every touch visible to them, and yet, it might as well have been only the two of us. Kier listed the expenses and costs of running the court, and Rhys gave another vague nod. This time, his nose brushed the spot between my neck and shoulder, followed by a passing graze of his mouth. My breasts tightened, becoming full and heavy, aching, aching like what was now pooling in my core. Heat filled my face, my blood. But Kier said at last, as if his own self-control slipped the leash,
I had heard the rumors, and I didn't quite believe them.
His gaze settled on me, on my breasts, peeked through the folds of my dress, of my legs, spread wider than they'd been minutes before, and Rhys's hand in dangerous territory.
But it seems true. Tamlin's pet is now owned by another master. You should see how I make her beg,
Rhys murmured, nudging my neck with his nose. Kier clasped his hands behind his back.
I assume you brought her to make a statement. You know everything I do is a statement. Of course. This one, it seems, you enjoy putting in cobwebs and crowns.
Rhys's hand paused, and I sat straighter at the tone, the disgust. And I said to Kier in a voice that belonged to another woman, Perhaps I'll put a leash on you. Rhys's approval tapped against my mental shield, the hand at my ribs now making lazy circles.
She does enjoy playing,
he mused onto my shoulder. He jerked his chin toward the steward.
Get her some wine.
Pure command, no politeness. Kier stiffened, but strode off. Rhys didn't dare break from his mask, but the light kiss he pressed beneath my ear told me enough. Apology and gratitude, and more apologies. He didn't like this any more than I did, and yet to get what we needed, to buy Asriel time, he'd do it, and so would I. I wondered then, with his hands beneath my breasts and between my legs, what Rhys wouldn't give of himself. Wondered if perhaps the arrogance and swagger, if they masked a male who perhaps thought he wasn't worth very much at all. A new song began, like dripping honey, and edged into a swift-moving wind, punctuated with driving, relentless drums. I twisted, studying his face. There was nothing warm in his eyes, nothing of the friend I'd made. I opened my shield enough to let him in. What? His voice floated into my mind. I reached down the bond between us, caressing that wall of ebony adamant. A small sliver cracked, just for me, and I said into it, You are good, Rhys. You are kind. This mask does not scare me. I see you beneath it.
His hands tightened on me, and his eyes held mine as he leaned forward to brush his mouth against my cheek. It was answer enough, and an unleashing. I leaned a bit more against him, my legs widening ever so slightly. "Why'd you stop?" I said into his mind, into him. A near-silent growl reverberated against me. He stroked my ribs again, in time to the beat of the music, his thumb rising nearly high enough to graze the underside of my breasts. I let my head drop back against his shoulder. I let go of the part of me that heard their words, whore, whore, whore. Let go of the part that said those words alongside them, traitor, liar, whore. And I just became. I became the music and the drums and the wild, dark thing in the High Lord's arms. His eyes were wholly glazed, and not with power or rage. Something red-hot and edged with glittering darkness exploded in my mind. I dragged a hand down his thigh, feeling the hidden warrior's strength there. Dragged it back up again in a long, idle stroke, needing to touch him, feel him. I was going to catch fire and burn. I was going to start burning right here.
"Easy,"
he said with wicked amusement, through the open sliver in my shield.
"If you become a living candle, poor Kier will throw a hissy fit, and then you'd ruin the party for everyone.
Because the fire would let them all know I wasn't normal, and no doubt Kier would inform his almost allies in the Autumn Court, or one of these other monsters would." Rhys shifted his hips, rubbing against me with enough pressure that for a second, I didn't care about Kier or the Autumn Court or what Asriel might be doing right now to steal the orb. I had been so cold, so lonely for so long, and my body cried out at the contact of the joy of being touched and held and alive. The hand that had been on my waist slid across my abdomen, hooking into the low-slung belt there. I rested my head between his shoulder and neck, staring at the crowd as they stared at me, savoring every place where Rhys and I connected, and wanting more, more, more. At last, when my blood had begun to boil, when Rhys skimmed the underside of my breast with his knuckle, I looked to where I knew Kier was standing, watching us, my wine forgotten in his hand. We both did. The steward was staring unabashedly as he leaned against the wall, unsure whether to interrupt, half terrified to. We were his distraction. We were the sleight of hand while Az stole the orb. I knew Rhys was still holding Kier's gaze as the tip of his tongue slid up my neck. I arched my back, eyes heavy-lidded, breathing uneven. I'd burn and burn and burn.
"I think he's so disgusted that he might have given me the orb just to get out of here,"
Rhys said in my mind, that other hand drifting dangerously south. But there was such a growing ache there, and I wore nothing beneath that would conceal the damning evidence if he slid his hand a fraction higher.
"You and I put on a good show," I said back.
The person who said that, husky and sultry, I'd never heard that voice come out of me before, even in my mind. His hand slid to my upper thigh, fingers curving in. I ground against him, trying to shift those hands away from what he'd learn, to find him hard against my backside. Every thought eddied from my head. Only a thrill of power remained as I writhed along that impressive length. Rhys let out a low, rough laugh. Kier just watched and watched and watched, rigid, horrified, stuck here until Rhys released him, and not thinking twice about why or where the spymaster had gone. So I turned around again, meeting Rhys's now blazing eyes, and then licked up the column of his throat. Wind and sea and citrus and sweat, it almost undid me. I faced forward, and Rhys dragged his mouth along the back of my neck, right over my spine, just as I shifted against the hardness pushing into me, insistent and dominating, precisely as his hand slid a bit too high on my inner thigh. I felt the predatory focus go right to the slickness he'd felt there, proof of my traitorous body. His arms tightened around me, and my face burned, perhaps a bit from shame, but Rhys sensed my focus, my fire slip.
"It's fine," he said, but that mental voice sounded breathless. "It means nothing. It's just your body reacting."
"Because you're so irresistible."
My attempt to deflect sounded strained, even in my mind. But he laughed, probably for my benefit. We danced around and teased and taunted each other for months. And maybe it was my body's reaction, maybe it was his body's reaction. But the taste of him threatened to destroy me, consume me, and another male. I'd had another male's hands all over me when Tamlin and I were barely fighting my nausea. I pasted a sleepy, lust-fog smile on my face, right as Asriel returned and gave Rhys a subtle nod. He'd gotten the orb. Moore slid up to the spymaster, running a proprietary hand over his shoulders, his chest, as she circled to look into his face. Az's scar-mottled hand wrapped around her bare waist, squeezing once, the confirmation she also needed. She offered him a little grin that would no doubt spread rumors, and sauntered into the crowd again, dazzling, distracting, leaving them thinking Az had been here the whole time, leaving them pondering if she'd extend Asriel an invitation to her bed. Asriel just stared after Moore, distant and bored. I wondered if he was as much of a mess inside as I was. Rhys crooked a finger to Kier, who, scowling a bit in his daughter's direction, stumbled forward with my wine. He'd barely reached the dais before Rhys's power took it from him, floating the goblet to us. Rhys set it on the ground beside the throne, a stupid task he'd thought up for the steward, to remind him of his powerlessness, that this throne was not his.
"Should I test it for poison?" Rhys drawled, even as he set into my mind. "Cassian's waiting. Go."
Rhys had the same sex-addled expression on his perfect face, but his eyes. I couldn't read the shadows in his eyes. Maybe for all our teasing, after Amarantha, he didn't want to be touched by a woman like that, didn't even enjoy being wanted like that. I had been tortured and tormented, but his horrors had gone to another level.
"No, milord," Kier groveled. "I would never dare harm you."
Another distraction, this conversation. I took that as my cue to stride to Cassian, who was snarling by a pillar at anyone who came too close. I felt the eyes of the court slide to me, felt them all sniff delicately at what was so clearly written over my body. But as I passed Kier, even with the High Lord at my back, he hissed almost too quietly to hear,
"You'll get what's coming to you, whore."
Night exploded into the room. People cried out, and when the darkness cleared, Kier was on his knees. Rhys still lounged on the throne, his face a mask of frozen rage. The music stopped. Moore appeared at the edge of the crowd, her own features set in smug satisfaction, even as Asriel approached her side, standing too close to be casual.
"Apologize," Rhys said.
My heart thundered at the pure command, the utter wrath. Kier's neck muscles strained, and sweat broke out on his lip.
"I said," Rhys intoned with such horrible calm, "apologize."
The steward groaned, and when another heartbeat passed, bone cracked. Kier screamed, and I watched. I watched as his arm fractured into not two, not three, but four different pieces, the skin going taut and loose in all the wrong spots. Another crack. His elbow disintegrated. My stomach churned. Kier began sobbing, the tears half from rage, judging by the hatred in his eyes as he looked at me, then Rhys. But his lips formed the words, "I'm sorry." The bones of his other arm splintered, and it was an effort not to cringe. Rhys smiled as Kier screamed again, and said to the room,
"Should I kill him for it?"
No one answered. Rhys chuckled. He said to his steward,
"When you wake up, you're not to see a healer. If I hear that you do."
Another crack. Kier's pinky finger went saggy. The male shrieked. The heat that had boiled my blood turned to ice.
"If I hear that you do, I'll carve you into pieces and bury them where no one can stand a chance of putting you together again."
Kier's eyes widened in true terror now. Then, as if an invisible hand had struck the consciousness from him, he collapsed to the floor. Rhys said to no one in particular,
"Dump him in his room."
Two males who looked like they could be Moore's cousins or brothers rushed forward, gathering up the steward. Moore watched them, sneering faintly, though her skin was pale. He'd wake up,
That's what Rhys had said. I made myself keep walking as Rhys summoned another courtier to give him reports on whatever trivial matters. But my attention remained on the throne behind me, even as I slipped beside Cassian, daring the court to approach, to play with me. None did. And for the long hour afterward, my focus half remained on the High Lord, whose hands and mouth and body had suddenly made me feel awake, burning. It didn't make me forget, didn't make me obliterate hurts or grievances. It just made me alive. Made me feel as if I'd been asleep for a year, slumbering inside a glass coffin, and he had just shattered through it and shaken me to consciousness. The High Lord, whose power had not scared me, whose wrath did not wreck me. And now I didn't know where that put me. Knee-deep in trouble seemed like a good place to start. Chapter 43. The wind roared around Rhys and me as he winnowed from the skies above his court, but Valaris didn't greet us. Rather, we were standing by a moonlit mountain lake ringed in pine trees, high above the world. We'd left the court as we'd come in, with swagger and menace. Where Cassian, Azriel, and Mor had gone with the orb, I had no idea. Alone at the edge of the lake, Rhys said hoarsely, "I'm sorry." I blinked. "What do you possibly have to be sorry for?" His hands were shaking, as if in the aftermath of that fury at what Kyr had called me, what he'd threatened. Perhaps he'd brought us here before heading home in order to have some privacy before his friends could interrupt.
"I shouldn't have let you go. Let you see that part of us, of me."
I'd never seen him so raw, so stumbling. "I'm fine." I didn't know what to make of what had been done, both between us and to Kyr. But it had been my choice to play that role, to wear these clothes, to let him touch me. But I said slowly, "We knew what tonight would require of us. Please, please don't start protecting me. Not like that." He knew what I meant. He'd protected me under the mountain, but that primal male rage he'd just shown Kyr. A shattered study splattered in paint flashed through my memory. Rhys rasped,
"I will never, never lock you up, force you to stay behind. But when he threatened you tonight, when he called you
whore, that's what they'd called him. For 50 years they'd hissed it. I'd listened to Lucian spit the words in his face." Rhys released a jagged breath.
"It's hard to shut down my instincts."
Instincts, just like someone else had instincts to protect, to hide me away. "Then you should have prepared yourself better," I snapped. "You seemed to be going along just fine with it until Kyr said,
I will kill anyone who harms you,"
Rhys snarled.
"I will kill them and take a damn long time doing it,"
he panted.
"Go ahead. Hate me. Despise me for it."
"You are my friend," I said, and my voice broke on the word. I hated the tears that slipped down my face. I didn't even know why I was crying. Perhaps for the fact that it had felt real on that throne with him, even for a moment, and it likely hadn't been, not for him. "You're my friend, and I understand that you're High Lord. I understand that you will defend your true court and punish threats against it, but I don't want you to stop telling me things, inviting me to do things, because of the threats against me." Darkness rippled, and wings tore from his back.
"I am not him,"
Rhys breathed.
"I will never be him, act like him. He locked you up and let you wither and die."
"He tried—"
Stop comparing me to him."
The words cut me short. I blinked.
"You think I don't know how stories get written? How this story will be written?"
Rhys put his hands on his chest, his face more open, more anguished than I'd seen it.
"I am the Dark Lord, who stole away the Bride of Spring. I am a demon and a nightmare, and I will meet a bad end. He is the Golden Prince, the hero who will get to keep you as his reward for not dying of stupidity and arrogance. The things I love have a tendency to be taken from me."
He'd admitted that to me under the mountain. but his words were kindling to my temper, to whatever pit of fear was yawning open inside of me.
And what about my story? I hissed. What about my reward? What about what I want?
What is it that you want, Feyre?
I had no answer. I didn't know. Not anymore.
What is it that you want, Feyre?
I stayed silent. His laugh was bitter, soft.
I thought so. Perhaps you should take some time to figure that out one of these days.
Perhaps I don't know what I want, but at least I don't hide what I am behind a mask, I seethed. At least I let them see who I am, broken bits and all. Yes, it's to save your people. But what about the other masks, Rhys? What about letting your friends see your real face? But maybe it's easier not to. Because what if you did let someone in? And what if they saw everything and still walked away? Who could blame them? Who would want to bother with that sort of mess?
He flinched. The most powerful High Lord in history flinched, and I knew I'd hit hard and deep. Too hard. Too deep.
Rhys, I said.
Let's go home.
The word hung between us, and I wondered if he'd take it back, even as I waited for my own mouth to bark that it wasn't home. But the thought of the clear, crisp blue skies of Valaris at sunset, the sparkle of the city lights. Before I could say yes, he grabbed my hand, not meeting my stare, and winnowed us away. The wind was hollow as it roared around us, the darkness cold and foreign. Cassian, Azriel, and Moore were indeed waiting at the townhouse. I bid them good night while they ambushed Rhysand for answers about what Kyr had said to provoke him. I was still in my dress, which felt vulgar in the light of Valaris, but found myself heading into the garden, as if the moonlight and chill might cleanse my mind. Though, if I was being honest, I was waiting for him. What I'd said? I had been awful. He'd told me those secrets, those vulnerabilities, in confidence, and I'd thrown them in his face, because I knew it had hurt him, and I knew I hadn't been talking about him. Not really. Minutes passed, the night still cool enough to remind me that spring had not fully dawned, and I shivered, rubbing my arms as the moon drifted. I listened to the fountain and the city music. He didn't come. I wasn't sure what I'd even tell him. I knew he and Tamlin were different, knew that Rhysand's protective anger tonight had been justified, that I would have had a similar reaction. I'd been bloodthirsty at the barest details of Moore's suffering, had wanted to punish them for it. I had known the risks. I had known I'd be sitting in his lap, touching him, using him. I'd been using him for a while now. And maybe I should tell him I didn't want or expect anything from him. Maybe Rhysand needed to flirt with me, taunt me, as much for a distraction and sense of normalcy as I did. And maybe I'd said what I had to him because I'd realized that I might very well be the person who wouldn't let anyone in. And tonight, when he'd recoiled after he'd seen how he affected me, it had crumpled something in my chest. I had been jealous. Of Cressida. I had been so profoundly unhappy on that barge because I'd wanted to be the one he smiled at like that. And I knew it was wrong, but I did not think Rhys would call me a whore if I wanted it. Wanted him. No matter how soon it was after Tamlin. Neither would his friends. Not when they had been called the same and worse. And learned to live and love beyond it. Despite it. So maybe it was time to tell Rhys that, to explain that I didn't want to pretend. I didn't want to write it off as a joke or a plan or a distraction. And it'd be hard, and I was scared and might be difficult to deal with, but I was willing to try with him, to try to be something together, whether it was purely sex or more, or something between or beyond them. I didn't know. We'd find out. I was healed, or healing, enough to want to try. If he was willing to try, too. If he didn't walk away when I voiced what I wanted. Him. Not the High Lord, not the most powerful male in Prithian's history. Just him. The person who had sent music into that cell.
who had picked up that knife in Amarantha's throne room to fight for me when no one else dared, and who had kept fighting for me every day since, refusing to let me crumble and disappear into nothing. So I waited for him in the chilled, moonlit garden, but he didn't come. Rhys wasn't at breakfast, or lunch. He wasn't in the townhouse at all. I'd even written him a note on the last piece of paper we'd used. "I want to talk to you." I'd waited 30 minutes for the paper to vanish, but it had stayed in my palm until I threw it in the fire. I was pissed enough that I stalked into the streets, barely remarking that the day was balmy, sunny, that the very air now seemed laced with citrus and wildflowers and new grass. Now that we had the orb, he'd no doubt be in touch with the queens, who would no doubt waste our time just to remind us they were important, that they too had power. Part of me wished Rhys could crush their bones the way he'd done with Kier's the night before. I headed for Amryn's apartment across the river, needing the walk to clear my head. Winter had indeed yielded to spring. By the time I was halfway there, my overcoat was slung over my arm, and my body was slick with sweat beneath my heavy cream sweater. I found Amryn the same way I'd seen her the last time, hunched over the book, papers strewn around her. I set the blood on the counter. She said without looking up, "Ah, the reason why Rhys bit my head off this morning." I leaned against the counter, frowning. "Where's he gone off to?" "To hunt whoever attacked you yesterday. If they had ash arrows in their arsenal." I tried to soothe the worry that bit deep. "Do you think it was the summer court?" The blood ruby still sat on the floor, still used as a paperweight against the river breeze blowing in from the open windows. Varian's necklace was now beside her bed, as if she fell asleep looking at it. "Maybe," Amryn said, dragging a finger along a line of text. She must be truly absorbed to not even bother with the blood. I debated leaving her to it, but she went on. "Regardless, it seems that our enemies have a track on Rhys's magic, which means they're able to find him when he winnows anywhere or if he uses his powers." She at last looked up. "You lot are leaving Valaris in 2 days. Rhys wants you stationed at one of the Illyrian war camps, where you'll fly down to the human lands once the queens send word."
"Why not today?" Amryn said.
"Because Starfall is tomorrow night, the first we've had together in 50 years. Rhys is expected to be here amongst his people."
"What's Starfall?"
Amryn's eyes twinkled. "Outside of these borders, the rest of the world celebrates tomorrow as Ninsar, the day of seeds and flowers." I almost flinched at that. I hadn't realized just how much time had passed since I'd come here. "But Starfall," Amryn said, "only at the Night Court can you witness it. Only within this territory is Starfall celebrated in lieu of the Ninsar revelry. The rest, and the why of it, you'll find out. It's better left as a surprise."
Well, that explained why people had seemed to already be preparing for a celebration of sorts. High fae and fairies hustling home with arms full of vibrant wildflower bouquets and streamers and food. The streets were being swept and washed, storefronts patched up with